stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 43.
Wow.
Wow.
You're coming up on 50. What are you going to do?
What do you mean, me?
You, Jeff, have been doing this for 43 shows.
You have been doing this for short, for 43 shows?
A very short amount of time.
Well, we got...
I'm trying to get the hang of it.
We did change all the graphics on the website, finally. Got a picture of Gretchen's smiling, red-haired face. Well, her face doesn't have red hair on it, but...
I'm a redhead, I think, is what he's trying to say.
I think I was trying to say that.
Uh-huh.
But not on the face. Her facial
hair
is actually
hair
blonde.
Is under control. I just have to... it requires a lot of maintenance every week, but it's under control.
Yeah. Well, we're recording on Labor Day weekend. I imagine the show will come out soon, either this weekend or a little bit after. And Gretchen, you have got a trip going on tomorrow.
I do. I get to go to lovely Hong Kong for a couple weeks.
Are you looking forward to it?
Yes, Hong Kong's a lovely place. And if I get the opportunity to go visit some factories in southern China, I'll come back and tell everybody what it's really like to have factory life if you're a Chinese worker.
Because this is a business trip.
Well, it is a business trip, but it's also kind of interesting because I don't think a lot of people realize that what a coveted job working in a factory is if you're a Chinese citizen. And even though you may make a dollar a day, and we find that appalling, or a lot of Americans find that appalling, it's actually very coveted and highly desirable. And,
really?
If you go and you work in a factory for like 5 years, you can support your family for probably 10 years.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting dynamic.
Well, you were telling me before, the factories in China are also very cyclical.
Yes, they are very cyclical. Everybody's really busy right now getting ready for what we call fourth quarter, which is when Americans buy. Well, not just Americans, but you know, it's pretty much spurred by the Christmas holiday season.
Absolutely. I mean, in retail, that's what's golden. What is it, like 75% to 80% of all retail is sold in the last quarter?
A lot of companies don't make any money at all until the last 8 weeks of the year.
Right.
It's pretty remarkable.
Right. Now, a very, very little known fact, though, is there is a couple states in America that's the biggest retail holiday is actually Labor Day. Did you know that?
Labor Day.
And I'm just making that up because it just sounded so silly. Like, who buys stuff on Labor Day?
I was actually going to say, I thought you were going to say Halloween, because believe it or not, Halloween is a huge sales holiday.
Well, what is number two? Do you happen to know?
It's Halloween. Really? Yeah, it's candy and costumes. And believe it or not, now
candy
Halloween,
and costumes,
Halloween
sure.
is a worldwide holiday. Hard to believe.
It's really hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to do it. When we get up to Halloween, we'll have to do a Halloween show and kind of go into it a little bit. Good. Well, that sounds fun. Well, I did want to talk just a little bit about Labor Day and the origins of it.
Oh, that's a good idea. How very topical you are.
Well, I tried to make some jokes out of this too, but my jokes aren't too good. So I'll just go into the boring stuff. So it started on September 5th, 1882. 10,000 workers assembled in New York City to participate in the first Labor Day Parade. Of course, it wasn't called the Labor Day Parade.
What was it called? Do you know?
I don't know. I think they were marching because they were pissed at something, you know? But after marching from City Hall to Union Square, the workers and their families gathered at Reservoir Park for a picnic, concert, and speeches. I think U2 was playing, if I remember. So anyways, what happened is this guy who organized it was a fellow named Peter J. McGuire. He's a carpenter, and he was a labor union leader. Well, he proposed, I guess this thing was so successful, and they did not have a holiday between the long period between Independence Day and Thanksgiving Day.
Mm-hmm.
So, he proposed Labor Day. Now, I was thinking, this is where my jokes come in. This is around 1882, and if you know 1882, like I know 1882, I'm thinking they could have called, because these were like big deals back in the 1880, that decade.
Yeah,
they could have called, instead of Labor Day, Electric Light Day, because
that was
Electric Light has just invented, and it was like changing the nation as we know it. I think Electric Light Day would be pretty cool. You
it
know,
would be
turn
pretty
on
cool.
a lot, turn on Electric Light for Electric Light Day.
Celebrate some of our big inventions.
Yeah,
uniquely American.
All of our listeners could enjoy this Phonograph Day.
There
also,
you
the
go.
Phonograph was also invented and starting to gain some real interest. Wouldn't Phonograph Day be cool?
Yes, Phonograph Day would be cool.
We could play our phonographs. You know what? Also, they were starting to just build in the 1880s. Architecturally.
Something with city planning.
Kind of. Think downtown. Skyscraper.
Oh. Yeah.
So I was thinking they could call it Skyscraper Day. In fact, from now on, I'm going to buck the system. I'm going to call it Skyscraper Day. So happy Skyscraper Day. Have a good skyscraper weekend. And the other... Okay, see, these I'm reaching. These are really dumb. But the other thing, this was a big decade. So the other thing that happened in a decade was construction began on the Panama Canal. Panama, So, it's Canal Weekend. They could have called them all those things, but they chose
Labor Day. Somehow Labor Day sort of affected more people, huh? So do you think maybe
I'll tell you, back in the 1880s, you know, I don't know what the percentage of people that were in labor unions, but...
Well, I'm thinking labor workers, because that was the Industrial Revolution, so everybody was working.
Yeah, you know? And having babies.
And not the most... healthy conditions either.
No, but you know, back then, if you worked in a factory, you could support your family for years.
No, they're not Chinese. I'm talking about the American.
Oh, that's right.
You got the wrong culture.
Wrong culture, wrong year. All right. Well, what do you got for us, Gretchen? That was my introduction to Labor Day.
Let's dive in.
Oh, before I go, let's let me play real fast the song that I wrote last year for Labor Day. It's called...
Skyscraper Day.
Yeah, I'm going to have to rewrite my lyrics now. Anyway, I wrote this last year. It's not my best song, but you know, who has a Labor Day song? So here it is.
Summer's over and it's about time. Been waiting since New Year's to let you know that I'm keeping all my holidays open this year. Labor Day weekend is near. I understood Christmas, you had family. Forgave you Easter, though you excluded me. But my heart's been waiting for you to see that Labor Day weekend was made for you and me. We could go dancing under the lights, or take a trip and see the sights. By the end of 3 days and nights with me, you will be mine. I understood Christmas, you had family. Forgave you Easter, though you excluded me. But my heart's been waiting for you to see that Labor Day weekend wasn't made for just you. Labor Day weekend wasn't made for just me. Labor Day weekend was made for you and me.
Okay, well, that was great. Love that Labor Day song, Jeff.
Did you enjoy that?
Yes, I did.
She didn't even hear it. Because we're in the studio. We just went straight through it. I put it in after, in post, as we in the know say. We in the profession, we in the business say. What business, you ask? The business of talking in microphones in our second bedroom. That's the business we're in, baby.
You've been doing it far longer than I have, too. So
yes, I'm a veteran
a
of this business.
Of this. You are a pro. Well, let's dive into something meatier than perhaps the origins of Labor Day.
Okay, are you putting down my topic?
No.
Was that what you're doing?
No, I'm just saying, how about
I thought our listeners needed to
really
be informed.
Serious.
All right, serious.
Somewhat serious, but
all right.
It's all over the news now.
All right.
And it's I find it pretty appalling, but do you realize that the majority of Americans, I mean, like by a far amount, like 60% of Americans, believe that authorities should single out people who look Middle Eastern for security screenings at airports and train stations, and that is drawing sharp criticism from civil liberties groups. And of that group, 66% of whites support the screening for Easterners, and 71% of African Americans support it, which I find absolutely amazing, considering we're talking about racial profiling here.
Well, okay. You know, I mean, it doesn't make sense to have Granny go through all the security stuff, does it? Kind of doesn't. In fact, there's a podcast named Fly With Me, Joe Dayan. Very, very good podcast. I would highly recommend. I enjoy it, especially being a veteran of the airline industry.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good. And actually, he's got an uncanny ability to report and actually create emotional segments and very heartfelt segments. He's very, very talented. At any rate, one of the things that he had an aviation professional on, and they both kind of agreed that the whole security, what you see at the airport, the taking off of the shoes because of one guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff is for show. It's to make us feel better. But it doesn't really do anything. What actually is effective is profiling to some extent, where Al has done this for years in Israel. I mean, I know what that's like. But is profiling and the background work that you don't see at the airport, going through the manifest, looking at who's on, matching database with suspected or suspicious people and so forth. But the stuff you see at the airport, you know, X-raying Granny and making her take off her shoes, completely useless. It's to make us feel better.
Okay, but what you're talking about is convenience and cost effectiveness. And profiling is convenient because it makes life easier for the large segment of white travelers like you, and probably your podcast partner, who can avoid the hassle at the airport. And also, it reins in costs by keeping intensive searches down to a selective few.
Right.
Such as that person wearing those suspicious heels on their shoes.
Cost and convenience.
Right. That is one of the reasons.
But doesn't that make sense?
No, it's illegal. It's illegal. It is against the moral fiber of this country. That's why we can't do it. It is totally
against
the Fourth Amendment.
So we have to, because of the Fourth Amendment, we have to do something inefficient. And that may be very well the case. But it is, you have to admit, inefficient, what we're doing right now at the airport.
That's true. I agree with you there. It's inefficient. However, it is purely racial profiling, and that is any police or private security practice in which a person is treated as a suspect because of his race, ethnicity, nationality, or religion. And, you know,
it's not Christians blowing up airplanes, right? It's Muslims. So why would you check a Christian? It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. Look at it this way. If I am a 6'4" guy, that's probably what my physical, you know, thing is, right? If they had a bunch, a white guy, if they had a bunch of terrorists that were on the 6'4" white guy gang, and I was going to be profiled because of that, I would say, yeah, I understand that. That makes sense. It is inconvenient for me, but I certainly understand why I get extra screening at the airport. I would be cool with it. I really would be. Because I understand it. I'm the engineer logical type that's like, yeah, that does make sense. Not to check Granny and to check me instead.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't think it's malicious, in other words.
Well, here's something
But if you make the point that it's against the Fourth Amendment, then that very well may be true.
It is true. And is it bigotry? Is it fear? Is it practicality? What happened to this Dallas software developer on his way home from Seattle? Vahid Zohravandi was reading his newspaper on an American Airlines flight, and an airline employee approached him and told him he was going to have to get off the plane. And he said, what happened? What's the problem? And they said the pilot doesn't feel comfortable flying him. He could very well be your coworker in your next, office.
Right. Oh, sure.
And it turns out that he's an Iranian-born U.S. citizen, and they questioned him for 3 hours. It is just so incredibly wrong, and it is so illegal. And the number of complaints on racial profiling against Arab Americans have gone up tremendously since September 11th. And the Department of Transportation has sent a message to all of the nation's 11 carriers, urging them not to target or discriminate against passengers based on their race or their dress or their names. They're not wrong, not only wrong, but they're illegal under various federal statutes, and we really shouldn't be doing it because 99% of those Muslim Arabs are law-abiding American citizens who are not terrorists.
Right.
Probably 99.9% of them. So
I have a manager at work that is Iranian. born an Iranian, and he just recently went back to Iran for a family visit, and he didn't have any problems. Now, so which leads me to believe, I wonder what the background, what the other side of the story of this the software developer was. They must have had something, some sort of linkage where they felt like they needed to talk to him more.
Well, he was allowed to board the next flight to Dallas, and when the plane landed, the flight attendant approached him and actually said she was sorry for what happened. And, and then the same thing happened again with a San Antonio businessman who was going first class on Delta Airlines all around the world. He was going to attend his brother's wedding, and he was put off the plane. And, you know, it just... everything about it is just wrong, and it harks back to the days in 1942 when Japanese Americans were interned in this country because of Pearl Harbor.
Right. I mean, I think ultimately, like I said before, the real work on keeping terrorists off the airplanes is going to be happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It's not in that screening.
Right. And it's not in the screening.
It's going to be good old fashioned police work, detective work, intelligence work. It's going to be using technology. And
one of the things that you did mention that LL does, which is getting a little bit more press, and I can sort of understand this a little bit more, is behavior profiling.
Right.
Where screeners study passengers for signs of nervousness.
Right, exactly.
And
I would want them to do that.
Because there's involuntary muscular behaviors that come across that you don't even know you're doing unless you are feeling guilty about something.
Right.
And so that's behavioral profiling.
And like Richard Reed, he was creeping out passengers in the lobby waiting for them to get on the airplane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was doing that twitching and being nervous and, it's like, come on. That's the kind of person that they should check.
Right. So there is a gentleman who's actually training the Department of Homeland Security to do this profiling technique, and he thinks he can spot a liar 90% of the time.
Yeah.
It's behavioral analysis, and he thinks he is as accurate as a polygraph.
Well, for fun once at SMU, the college right up the street here, I took a class on body language.
Uh-huh.
And they had a guy from the Dallas police come in and talked exactly about that very thing. And it is uncanny. He said how consistent the body movements, the unintentional body movements are when people lie.
A split second tightening of the muscle in the center of the forehead.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can see someone's forehead, the top of the eyes and the eyebrows, it's part of a facial expression of fear. How interesting.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I do believe in that there's a lot to be gained from that kind of work at the airport.
Yes, as long as everybody was looked at with the same set of scrutiny, then I have no issue with that. God, just to think that.
So you would want Granny to have the same kind of scrutiny, even from the eyeball, from the agent, to take away from the young Iranian, not very well dressed, 21-year-old. That doesn't make any sense to me, Gretchen.
No, I think all of them
just doesn't make sense to me.
To live in this country, though, the principle that we were built on is that we're all equal. We all came here because this was a better place to be and that we weren't going to be discriminated against because of how we looked or how we spoke. And to take that away because we were attacked 5 years ago. And
the only people attacking, though, is a very, very small demographic.
Absolutely.
And that is,
and do you realize that demographic is in 40 different countries and they're not all Arab? And that's the other thing that's very hard to spot, just an Arab.
Oh, sure, right.
Because it's not all just about Arabs.
No, it's not.
So, I mean, Al-Qaeda is pretty prevalent elsewhere, and to look for just an Arab as a terrorist is really not doing us that much good.
So, okay. We disagree a little bit on
that. Yeah, we do disagree on
that
one.
That's okay.
Because, I've always belonged to the ACLU, and I just have to say that we work so hard to get these liberties, and then, to just say, let's take them away, and because this is in the best interests of, convenience and quote-unquote safety, and because we're under attack. I don't know. It just, something about it bothers me. It just...
I kind of look at it though as like a personal thing, when I get on an airplane.
Yes.
I sort of hope they're paying more attention to the guys that look suspicious.
Like you.
Like the 6'4" white guy.
Yeah. And speaking of the 6'4" white guy, did you know that tall people not only earn more than their shorter counterparts, but they are smarter?
Oh, absolutely. I knew that. I mean, I've known that for years because I knew something was up. I couldn't quite explain it, the vast amount of intelligence and the wealthy, wealthy income, but
well,
now I know.
Researchers have finally proved it, that there's something to the fact that not only do tall people earn more, but they are smarter. And as early as age three, before you've even gone to school, and throughout childhood, taller children perform significantly better on cognitive tests.
Well, so that would indicate that it's, you know, what you always hear is tall people have more confidence and do better in business because they do. They are physically a little bit empowering. But that, what you
those
just
are,
said.
Those are some of the studies. The low self-esteem by shorter people.
Yeah.
The not as great as health and social discrimination. That is part of it. But this new research indicates that a height advantage is really accurate in the job world. And taller individuals tend to seek out higher paying occupations that require more advanced verbal and numerical skills.
Hmm.
So that's why you're getting better rewards.
Right, so, right.
And it's true of both men and women in the U.S. and the United Kingdom. A height advantage of 4 inches equated with a 10% increase in wages. 4 inches.
Wow.
Got 10%. So you, let me do the math here, you technically should be making what? You know, $1 million?
There you go. I'm going to go in and ask for a raise.
See,
based on my height.
On your height.
Well, that's very interesting.
Well, for you it is.
Yes, it is. It's very, very, makes me very happy.
Well, there you go.
Well, one of our listeners, a fellow named CB, did you see this article I sent you on Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh, Dunkin' Donuts. Now, that would be one of my top five absurdities for the week.
Yeah, this is pretty absurd.
Thank you, CB, for showing us that Dunkin' Donuts is about to change how America
Well, you know, I mean,
this lowly donut.
Yeah, I mean, this is the theme that we had last week, that basically they're starting this like campaign to grow their business threefold. And I just found out why. They were actually, the parent company of Dunkin' Donuts was acquired by
Bain Capital.
By Bain, exactly, exactly, and a couple other partners.
Right. It's so, all about.
So they're just trying to market the shit out of it at this
point.
And
then they'll flip it.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's okay. That's their business. But all right, so I wanted to talk about it. The campaign is called America Runs on Dunkin'.
Can you say it with a straight face?
No. The ads will stress the company's primary mission is to provide a full range of quality food and beverages that are affordably priced and served fast.
Right.
So in conjunction with this campaign, Dunkin' Donuts will launch a special section of the company's website called the D-Stop that will feature fun interactive elements for customers online, including videos, games, quizzes. I cannot wait to go. Doesn't that sound like very not late 90s web marketing? Who wants to go to Dunkin' Donuts and play Dunkin' Donut games?
Well, the same people who were going to go in for the freshly made coffee and baked goods that energize Americans from all walks of life and keep the country running.
I know.
Dedicated to hard work and positive outlooks. We're talking about a donut.
I was gonna count how many times they said hardworking Americans in this little press release. They said it about 50 times. I think they're really kind of going for that. I'm a hardworking guy, and I like to go in and get a donut.
That's right. Know? That's right. But did you also notice that they are the number one retailer of coffee by the cup? Did you see that? They sell 2.7 million cups a day.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that the PR says is not only are they trying to connect emotionally with, isn't that sweet, connecting emotionally with the hardworking cross-section of Americans, but they also want to fuel them physically and emotionally.
Oh, God,
so Dunkin' Donuts is going to fuel them emotionally.
It's a donut, people. Now, I can't wait to see the campaign, and it's coming. Just look for it everywhere, because it's going to be omnipotent.
It's going to be omnipotent, so
right.
Yeah, beware. We're going to see a lot of Dunkin' Donuts ads.
Right. So speaking of absurd...
Yes.
I found more absurdities this week.
All right.
So this one just...
You were very heavy last week, so absurdities are good.
So absurdities are good. Here we go. Tom and Jerry.
The Cat and the Mouse?
Tom and Jerry, yes. The cartoons.
Yeah.
Tom and Jerry are going to be...
I always liked Itchy and Scratchy better, though.
How about Flintstones and Scooby-Doo? They're all owned by Turner Broadcasting, and
they
are 1,500 classic Hanna-Barbera cartoons, and they are going to be edited to edit out scenes that glamorize smoking. Because, get this, one person complained in Europe that they didn't like to see these cartoon characters smoking. Now, let's remember, these are classic cartoons.
Who smokes?
Well, in the case of the one that they're going to license out, or they're going to edit out, it is it was, let's see, Jerry. Let's see, there's two smoking scenes on Tom and Jerry. They were not appropriate for a cartoon aimed at children. The first one was called Texas Tom, where a hapless cat Tom tried to impress a feline, female feline, by rolling a cigarette, lighting it, and smoking it with one hand.
One paw, you
mean. One paw, right, one paw. And in the second, it's called Tennis Chumps, Tom's opponent in the match smokes a large cigar. So both of these scenes
they don't like the cigar smoking
out.
Either, huh?
Correct. And if there's any appearance at all...
Because Fred Flintstone did a lot of doobie smoking.
Well, that's probably all going to be gone.
At least the creators of probably did a lot of doobie smoking.
If it's acceptable or glamorized, where it might encourage imitation, it's going to be edited out.
Mommy, I want to be like Tom.
I know.
The cat.
And what's amazing to me is that these are historic cartoons made over 50 years ago in a different time, in a different place. And yet we can't teach our children that. So they're not going to see the real history. You'll never see really what Tom and Jerry were about or what the times were like 50 years ago. Because one person in Europe says that they were not comfortable. Well, then turn the TV off and don't let your children watch it.
You know, there's a lot. These one people are popular. Back to the terrorism thing real fast. Richard Reed.
Yes.
Is the reason that we all take off our shoes at
yes,
the airport.
One person.
One person.
And
it's absolutely amazing. The power that in some certain cases one person can have on the world.
So get the classic Tom and Jerry and Flintstones and Scooby-Doo before all the cigarette scenes are gone.
They're going to get rid of it in the original material?
Yes.
I mean, they'll still have archives. They're going to keep the archives.
We'd hope they'd keep the archives, but they're saying they're not going to broadcast anything.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Yeah.
Something else absurd?
Sure, go ahead.
Rents in New York. You saw that.
Oh, yeah.
Rents in New York, $2,500 for a two-bedroom. That is the most expensive city to rent.
By a lot, actually.
In the United States.
Yeah. San Francisco comes in second at $1,740, and followed by Boston, then D.C., and then L.A., and then Chicago.
Oh, and Dallas finishes at 18th, which is actually not so bad.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think now. I looked at this list. Gretchen shared with me a top 20 before, a top 25. The only things that really stand out as surprising on the list to me were Detroit higher than Atlanta, Dallas, and Phoenix.
Wow.
I mean, Detroit just gets so much. I've never been to Detroit, so I'm sure it's a cool place. But, I mean, by the way, this rent is for the metro area. I mean, the city itself. It's not for the suburbs. So it surprised me that Detroit was higher than Atlanta, Dallas, Phoenix. Atlanta, Dallas, Phoenix, to me, are all similar cities. So,
but it's only by like $20 or $30, too, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It was just above that. And the other surprise was Houston. It was at 24.
Mm.
Houston's
a bargain.
Houston's a bargain. It's one of the bigger cities, metropolitan areas in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very pleasant place, I've never thought, because it's just so humid, but I guess some people like it. What are the surprises? Philly, pretty high, I guess, up there, kind of surprised me. Up there with Miami.
Like
Baltimore
seven.
At number 9 kind of surprised me a little bit. I think of Baltimore as more blue-collar.
Mm.
Minneapolis-St. Paul, higher than I thought it would be. That ended up at number 12 at $875. Which really isn't that bad of a rent for two bedroom, two bath. I mean, Dallas is what, 7-Eleven?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, very interesting. But New York, the other surprising thing is New York is way above the others.
Mm-hmm. And actually, this sounds low to me coming from New York. I could have rented, I had a two bedroom place, but
okay.
When they say two bedrooms, they're also not talking about a lot of square footage either. That's the other thing everybody always thinks, oh, well, this will be a spacious two bedroom. I could have rented a two bedroom, one bath condo for $3,000 a month. So I think it just all depends where you are, but this is
Fact, the it says based on two bedroom two bath apartments at move.com, so they don't really it could be like the two bedroom two bath in New York is a smaller square footage than the similar one in Dallas, which you're probably right about that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that is a little bit absurd.
Something else absurd?
Well, this is kind of sad, but it's kind of the same theme I go off on a lot, so it's not new. But there's another study here, and I thought it was very interesting. Waistlines are growing in the United States again. Last year, 31 states showed an increase in obesity. And the number one state, Mississippi.
Ooh.
Woo-hoo, way to go, way to go, Mississippi.
Way to go, Mississippi, right.
Keep on bringing it. Bring it, baby. So an estimated 29.5%, or basically, you know, one-third, of adults are obese, and that's 1.1% over last year. Colorado is the leanest state. About 16.9% of its adults are obese. One state decreased. That's amazing. One state out of 50 had a decrease, and that was Nevada. Populations are not all equal in terms of experiencing this health these health problems, Dr. Collins of the Center of Disease Control and Prevention said. Low-income populations tend to experience all the health problems we worry about at greater rates. Indeed, the five states with the highest obesity rates are Mississippi, Alabama, West Virginia, Louisiana, and Kentucky, which exhibit a lot more poverty than average. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't know if this is a correlation, although there is, because I actually did a study in my blog, check it out, 2 years ago on the electoral votes. All those are Bush states. Meanwhile, the five states with the lowest obesity have less poverty. They're some of the less poverty in the United States are Colorado, Hawaii, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Four out of those five states are carry states. In fact, I did a correlation study with the results of the electoral vote 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I showed that beyond a reason of a doubt, with statistical accuracy, that Republicans states are poorer, less educated, less professional. I did a bunch of different things than Democratic states, which is very interesting, very opposite to way I think that the perception. Normally, right? You think of Republicans as being more well-to-do, mm-hmm. more professional. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And speaking of extra weight, you've heard about the study that says that just being a little bit overweight can kill you. There's now research that's coming out that's saying that that is really, really true. And baby boomers who are just a tad pudgy are more likely to die prematurely than those who are at a healthy weight. So everybody's known for a long time that obesity contributes to an early death.
Right.
Now the experts are actually saying it's just a few extra pounds that can actually do a lot more harm. And it's not just cosmetic or social. In this study of 186,000 people, 20 to 40% were more likely to die prematurely than normal weight people if they were overweight.
Really?
The risk increased 2 to 3-fold for obese people. And there was a separate study on Korean patients between the ages of 30 and 95, and they found out the exact same thing. So there's been two studies within the past month that say the same thing, being a little bit overweight actually increases the risk for heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, and cancer.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Well, on that note, I think I may have good news for our listeners. Because there was also a report that says sugary drinks pile on the pounds. Okay, that's obvious.
What a surprise.
Not a surprise. But here's the interesting thing. Scientists looked at this, and they said one extra can of soda per day can pile on 15 pounds in a single year. And these scientists had a strong, what they call, weight of evidence. They did a correlation, essentially. Strongly suggests that this sort of increased consumption is the key reason, Gretchen, that more people have gained weight over the last 30 years.
One extra soft drink.
No, just soft drinks in general.
Soft drinks in general.
And here's the deal. Well,
there's a big push to get them out of schools now.
Here's what they found. Soft drinks trends, okay, the business trends, have marched lockstep. In other words, highly correlated. I'd like to see the statistical study because I could actually understand that, but this is, you know, newspaper article, with the growing obesity epidemic. So these scientists found an absolute linkage. Now, you have to be a little bit careful because, just because two things are correlated doesn't necessarily mean there's a causal relationship between the two. But one of the doctors, David Ludwig at Children's Hospital in Boston, said, when it comes to beverage trends and obesity, it's like documenting the force of gravity. There's an overwhelmingly strong case to be made for the causal relationship. About 1/3 of all carbohydrate calories in the American diet come from added sweeteners, and beverages account for half of this amount. The main sweetener in beverages is high fructose corn syrup. And I've been, personally, I don't think I've taken in high fructose corn syrup in probably 3 or 4 years. If I look at it, ingredients in the store, and I just don't take it because it's really, really a killer. So the good news there, here's another. The single 12-ounce can of soda provides the equivalent of 10 teaspoons of table sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news is, if you're obese, really avoid the soda pop, mm-hmm. and you'll be all right. You know, step in exercise, eat a little bit better, try all that stuff, but really think about cutting out the soda pop.
Even one can.
Yeah, that's 15 pounds a year.
That's amazing.
One can a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you gonna take me home tonight? Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you gonna let it all hang out, fat pop.
since poor Pluto was demoted.
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, poor Pluto was demoted. You know, it was kicked out of the solar system.
How do you think they feel, the Plutonians?
Well,
I think maybe they like their independence.
There was a protest yesterday sponsored by the friends of the astronomer who found Pluto.
Oh.
He found Pluto in 1930.
That astronomer is the guy that looks like the big goofy dog.
Yes, that's him. He has long ears.
Yes.
His name is Clyde Tombaugh, and he actually...
He kind of screwed up.
Well, no, he actually did really well. He discovered
it
at the Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona in 1930. And at the time, he wasn't using the sophisticated telescopes that we have now, and it was a huge discovery. It took 60 years before there were even stronger telescopes that could locate anything the same size as Pluto.
Wow.
So the friends of Clyde Tombaugh protested that the International Astronomical Union's recent decision to strip Pluto of its planet status is very unfair, and they wore T-shirts that said, "Protest for Pluto and size doesn't matter."
I like that. That's very cute. Size doesn't matter.
Size doesn't matter. And it actually turns out that when this, there were thousands of members, there were only 400 present at the time they took the vote, and there are actually thousands of members of this IAU group when they actually voted to kick Pluto out.
See, I never go to those meetings anymore.
Well, so basically, the controversy is not over yet.
Are you telling me there's a possibility that Pluto could come back?
Yeah, they're saying don't rewrite the history books yet because Pluto may make a comeback.
But isn't it true that there are a lot of there are a few other
heavenly bodies right
out there,
right?
Not normally what I think of when I think of a heavenly body, by the way, but what makes Pluto special, a special heavenly body?
Well, the definition of the planet
is it rotates around the sun.
Orbits around the sun and has to be large enough to assume a nearly round shape, as well as clear the neighborhood around its orbit. And Pluto technically didn't do that according to this 400 members of this group because it overlapped Neptune's orbit.
Right, I was just going to say that it's always been screwy because they sort of crisscross.
Right. So now there's only 8 planets according to this group and not 9.
It changes my whole reference system.
I know. It's very sad for Pluto.
I think, yeah.
Everybody wanted to get rid of Uranus, but no, we stuck with Pluto.
I know. We were stuck with Uranus. Your big fat anus.
Moving on.
We will never get rid of Uranus because, let's face it, little kids love to say it.
Well, even comedians like to say it. So.
And even podcasters like to say it. Pluto is pretty cool, too. It's a neat name.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, did you see what U.S. Representative who's running for Senate, Katherine Harris, said the other day?
Oh, I read something about this.
She told a religious journal that separation of church and state is a lie, and God and the nation's founding fathers did not intend the country to be a nation of secular laws. Now, of course, my question to Katherine Harris is, did she ever actually read the Constitution, which can pretty much do a search for God or religion, and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
The laws of the country are not based on religion. Wake up. So the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate also said that if Christians are not elected, politicians will legislate sin, including abortion and gay marriage. Harris made the comments, which she clarified Saturday in the Florida Baptist Witness, blah, 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 blah. Separation of church and state is a lie we have been told, Harris said in the interview published Thursday. And she said, separating religion and politics is wrong because God is the one who chooses our rulers. And that is true. God did choose George Bush. So she's right about that. So she also further went on to say, if you're not electing Christians, in essence, you are going to legislate sin. So obviously, lots of people have had a field day.
Oh, my God.
I can't, you know. I mean, she was already losing. She was not going to win her bid for the Senate. Now, I think this probably pushes her off the edge of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Let's hope so. Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, read the Constitution. That's all you got to do. Just read it. The founders were religious people, but they founded a country, a nation, in almost repulsion to a country that had religion as part of the government. They recognized and they said that so clearly. Why do we mess it up? Why do some people mess it up?
That would be Amendment Number 1. the Bill of Rights shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble. Yeah, that's the first one. They thought it was pretty big, so they made it number one.
Yeah. Mm. What is this pile of stuff? You just happened to rattle off the U.S. Constitution?
Well, I had it for the 4th and the 14th.
For the 4th and the 14th?
Yeah.
Why did you have the Constitution with you?
I carry it with me everywhere,
I guess
don't you?
Do. Yeah, so
don't
I can
you
just
have it memorized?
I can cite, oh, well, that's in violation of Amendment 4.
No. I was all about the racial profiling in the 4th and 14th Amendment. So.
Well, but you brought the whole thing.
Well, it printed that way. Hey, so guess who the most popular woman in the world is? Because this was really surprising to me. New poll by Forbes magazine.
The most popular, not Oprah?
No, not Oprah. She's number 14.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't tell me. Let me guess. Brad Pitt's wife, Angelina Jolie.
Well, they're not married, and no.
Oh, okay.
No.
What number is she?
She's not on the list far as I can tell.
Wait, this is the most popular woman?
Most powerful woman.
Oh, most powerful.
Powerful woman.
Oh, most powerful.
Powerful woman, yes.
Boy. Most powerful woman. It's got
and Ms. Harris does not appear on it, thank goodness.
Gosh, thank goodness, yeah.
Yes, thank goodness.
Okay, let me ask you this. Is she an American?
No.
No. Okay, that helps.
But an American is number two.
Okay. I want to say Condoleezza Rice.
She's
gotta be
number
up there.
Two.
Yeah.
Right. She's number two.
Okay.
But surprisingly, German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
Who loves back rubs.
Pardon me?
Oh, you never saw that videotape when Bush was over at the economics summit?
The G8, right?
Yeah, the
G8. Yeah.
And he
gave her a back rub?
Yeah.
Oh, a shoulder rub.
It was so
rub.
Inappropriate.
A shoulder rub.
Yeah, shoulder rub.
Shoulder rub. Right. Okay. All right. Sorry. Right. She was the only woman at the G8 this year, and she's improved ties with the U.S. after Gerhard.
After the great shoulder rub.
Yes, after the great shoulder rub. After she beat...
She was looking for a happy ending.
Well, she was actually in a really tight runoff with Gerhard Schroeder in September of 2005, and she won. And she's actually turned out to be a pretty popular politician
really?
In Germany. Mm-hmm. And she's improved ties with us because he totally opposed the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. And so we are actually liking her more. But she's now the most powerful woman in the world, which is pretty amazing. And followed by... Condoleezza is followed by China's vice premier, Wu Yi, which I didn't realize China had a woman that high up.
Woo-hoo Yi!
Followed then by...
That's what they call her in China.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the correct way to say it. Followed by PepsiCo's chief executive, Indra Nooyi, and Xerox Corporation CEO, Anne McCauley. And also on the list was Sonia Gandhi, Oprah Winfrey, Hillary Clinton at number 18, and Laura Bush at number 43.
Hmm.
So those are powerful women.
And I haven't heard probably of most of them.
Not popular, beautiful women whom you could probably name like 20.
It'd be interesting to see like mix the most powerful woman with like the bikini model. Do a bikini display. You know, come out in bikinis of the
right.
top 50 powerful women and see who wins. Wouldn't that be interesting?
No.
It would not get very good ratings, I don't imagine. Instead of Miss Universe, you know, Miss Powerful.
Powerful world leader.
And how many would you actually want to see in a bikini? I'll bet in the top 50, I'll bet there's one or two hot ones. Maybe.
It's totally irrelevant.
It's not. Come on.
Come on. We want to look
listeners,
at the top
tell us if it's irrelevant or not.
Most powerful men, of course, you know, it's probably Bill Gates. And do we really want to see him in a bikini?
No.
You want to see him in a Speedo?
No, of course not. But that's not.
It's the exact same thing.
No, it's not the exact same thing.
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. I don't want to see Bill Gates in a Speedo.
I think you do.
Oh, I don't. No, really don't.
Well, I have some very depressive. I've got to get that image out of my mind. It's really distracting me. I got some depressing thing. For the very first time ever recorded, Americans owe more money than they make. Household debt levels have now surpassed household income. When they say household income, I believe they're talking about after-tax income, so just so you know, by more than 8%, reaching 108.4%. So that's the ratio of household debt. And of course, that includes mortgages. Some of that is healthy debt,
as
we've talked about on this show before. But it's still high, 108.4%. Trying to look at the...
So your total debt exceeds your total income.
Correct. Families are just not... Charles Weller, the author of the recent Center of American Progress report, Drowning in Debt, said that the middle class specifically is struggling. Wages have been stagnant. They're losing the battle to keep up with the cost of living. The data shows that people are borrowing more money, not because of overconsumption, but because they're caught in a bind. In that bind, the only escape valve for middle class families is to borrow more money. Now, part of me is a little suspicious of that because I've seen this kind of behavior in people. And a lot of times it's like, well, they feel they deserve, you know, to buy things. I mean, I'm not talking about food. I'm not talking about basic shelter.
I'm talking about material goods.
But I'm talking about material goods. Mm-hmm. So they got to get the kid.
Keep up with the Joneses.
Right. They got to get the kid the latest toys.
Mm. So, no, they got to get dad the latest electronics and flat screen
TV. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Exactly. I deserve that. I work hard all day. I deserve that. You know, that's the mentality. Now that number compares, Gretchen. In 1952, the average debt to income ratio was less than 40%. So it's really got to be a
skyrocketed
pretty big problem
in 60 years.
Yeah, and this economist here is saying it does create a problem. They asked him all kinds of questions about, you know, how come we are in a kind of a business expansion period right now, and so it's a little bit of a dilemma. Why aren't corporations paying their people more? And they said, well, the guy replied, right now we're in an environment where salaries are not going up very much. They haven't gone up in the last 5 or 6 years. And we're in an environment where the CEOs are getting all the money, and they're also using that money, the cash, to buy other companies. You know, there's a lot of mergers going on.
Right.
But he said that we're going to get to a point where more and more consumers are going to go bankrupt, and that's going to be bad for business in general, because consumers who are bankrupt, it'll tighten up credit through banks and so forth, which ultimately will lead to increased interest rates and so forth and so on. It'll slow down the economy. So I don't know what the solution is here, but it's a very interesting dilemma. We're spending more. We're in more debt than what we make. It's really a bad thing.
Well, I think I talked about it too, that the average consumer credit card debt is, what, close to $9,000?
Right.
That's the average. That's shocking.
Right.
So.
Incredible.
How are we doing? Anyways.
I think we got 45 minutes, so we got a little bit more. I'm all done with my topics.
Well, I have something fun.
Okay.
Sounds like if you're looking for a new vacation idea, check out something called Vocation Vacations. It started in 2004.
Vocation Vacations.
And what it does is it lets you try a new career. It's not like role play. You actually get to go and try a new career. If you want to be a winemaker, if you want to be a pastry chef, or if you want to be a car racing pit crew member, you actually set it up with this Vocation Vacations, and you get to go and try your dream job on your vacation.
I think I actually read that article.
How fun
is that?
Yeah,
that is so fun.
Yeah, and its prices start at $400, and you pay extra for transportation and lodging, and they range up to 3 days with the top LA wedding planner, for example. It's $2,000 if you want to go do that. Or if you want to try be a video choreographer, you can go work out with Gwen Stefani's music video choreographer for $1,400.
Cool. I'd do it.
The most popular choices are entertainment, sports, culinary, fashion, and animal-related occupations.
I would do music in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I know you would.
Yeah.
So like Pro Cooking College, that's got a lot of people. Crow Canyon Archaeological Center, where you can actually go on an excavation, or Skip Barber Racing School. So it's just something to think about that's a little bit different than, and it turns out.
And those prizes didn't sound completely out of this world.
No, they're not. And you actually get in there and you actually do it.
Right.
You're not just like on the sidelines. But I didn't realize this, but one of the reasons why this vacation site is doing so well is that more than half of workers surveyed are totally discontent with their job, according to a 2005 survey. More than half. That's pretty shocking.
Wow.
As people get older, they just tend to, some of them are curiosity seekers. Some of them they're doing a brisk business in gift certificates that are given by family members who know somebody's burnt out. I thought that was really interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's just something else.
Well, you know, I've always had this theory, and I think this is where our generation is a little bit different than the generation the generations before us. Is
where everybody stayed at the same job forever and ever, and the company took care of you, and you took care of the company.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought, I know ideally I would, if I had more guts and could handle poverty. But but to have two different careers, one for the first part of my life
right.
and one for the second part of my
life.
And
that's what they're saying.
And
most
I mean
of these
completely
people are doing.
I mean completely different careers. Like,
right.
okay, I've done the engineering software you know, management thing now.
Right.
Now maybe I'd like to be an oceanographer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But I really can't. We don't have a society that makes that easy. I mean, I can. You can do anything you want, but that would mean going back to a lot of school and then going onto the job market, competing with 20, you know, smart 24-year-olds, and, you know, I'm not in that age range anymore.
Well, this is a baby step. And so you're not leaping into it, but
right.
they talked about this guy who was, you know, 9 to 5 for all these years, and he ended up wanting to be a dog trainer, and he went and tried it, and
cool.
he was so happy being a dog trainer, his blood pressure actually dropped, and everybody said he looked healthier. And
wow.
Yeah, so he changed careers. Mr.
Started looking like his dog.
All because he went and tried this 3-day event.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That was very fun.
Yeah. So.
Anything else?
Well, for those of us here in Texas, did you happen to see, this I also think is absurd, is ranking colleges by which is the best party school. Did you happen to see that the University of Texas at Austin is now voted the country's best party school?
Gosh,
oh, boy.
That's hard, and that's where the Bush twins went.
Hard to imagine that it actually beat out last year's winner, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it topped the overall list.
But both of the, you know what, the ironic thing is both of those schools, very good schools.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've always heard schools like Pepperdine, you know, out
right,
on the beaches,
right.
you know, California are sort
but
of the party
schools.
But it also beat
Penn State. And the 9th year in a row, Brigham Young finishes dead last. Cold, stone cold sober.
Wow.
But it actually won in the categories of use of hard liquor, third in beer drinking, and 13th in marijuana smoking.
What, BYU?
No, University of Texas.
Oh, UT. Wow.
Yeah, so there you go. Huh. So, and it actually ranks number 47th in terms of education, but it's number one in terms of partying.
It's only 47th. I thought it was higher up than that.
No,
wow.
No, that's according to the U.S. News and World Reports, America's best colleges.
Ah, that's very interesting.
So there you go.
Well, if I start that oceanographer.
Go Longhorns.
If I start that oceanographer second career, I guess I'll go get my degree at
UT. So you can drink hard liquor, beer, and smoke marijuana.
That's what I'm there for.
So not only do they have the National Football Championship, they're actually the best party school in the country.
That's a pretty good combination.
Didn't everybody go to a school where they were always ranked by some poll somewhere as going to the top party school?
You know, University of Illinois was never in the top party school.
No?
Yeah, no, it sucked.
Oh, well, my school was. So.
Really?
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
And that's,
is that what drove you
to go there? It's like, Mom, Dad, look,
number one
on the list.
Yeah, that'll make parents happy when it's $25,000 a year. Yes, sir. My hard-earned money.
To party $25,000 mm-hmm. away. Oh, man.
And you want to talk more about college?
Sure.
Because degrees through the decade. Did you see this? How degrees have changed in the last 40 years?
No, I haven't seen that.
It's actually been, the psychologists have now tied it to what's the American psyche, so what's been going on in the United States accounts for why these different degrees have ranked so high or so consistent. The three that have been consistent since 1970 are education, social sciences and history, and business. Those are higher education mainstays.
Okay.
Always, always, always.
Always
up very
there.
Clear career paths,
yep.
right? But in the 70s, English and biology also made it into the top rankings, and they're not anymore, and they haven't been since the 70s, and they look back at that, and they say the reasons were most people in English were women, and there was a lot of free-spirited female icons in the 70s, like Annie Hall and Carrie, the novel by Stephen King, Joyce Carol Oates, Margaret Thatcher. There were a lot of different people that made the 70s good, along with a lot of biological issues and environmental issues, which made biology a hot topic.
Yeah.
But then all these laws got passed, and so now it's not as much of a hot topic anymore. So then in the 80s, it became all about business. It jumped from number 3 to number 1, and actually engineering made its debut and was number 5 because that was the me decade.
Wow.
It was all about yuppies. It was all about a little bit conservative because there was AIDS, there was the market crash in 1987, there was the Cold War. So it was all about business and technology,
sure.
with VHS recorders and CDs. And then going into the 90s, business remained number one, but psychology jumped into number five.
Psychology.
Psychology, because, just think about it. Remember back in the 90s, there was Chicken Soup for the Soul and Men Are from Mars, Women from Venus.
Right.
Everybody was an armchair psychologist.
Right.
Remember, there was the O.J. Simpson, you know, Bronco ride, and everybody was just talking all about psychology.
So right.
It was all about psychology. And even in the box office, there was Silence of the Lambs, Crying Game, Sixth Sense. It was all about psychological intensity. And so psychology made its debut. And now, in the 2000s, guess what's debuted? It's always still about business and education and psychology and social sciences, but coming in at number five,
don't know.
Visual and performing arts. And they actually trace visual arts, not performing arts, but visual arts back to 1995's Toy Story. Because Toy Story, and since then, other Pixar sensations like Monsters and Finding Nemo, Incredibles, have actually made graphic design one of the most sought-after majors in the 2000s. And they're not so sure about performing arts, and they don't necessarily think that's going to continue to last, but they do think that graphic arts and the boom in computer technology.
Well, performance arts, think about the reality shows, the American Idol,
right.
And I mean, now
right.
Those things are proliferated, want to be a rock star.
Well, right, and celebrities like Paris Hilton and Tom and Madonna.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Very interesting. So I wonder if the degrees that people are getting into are lagging or leading indicators to actual trends.
Well, they actually say if you just want to see what's coming up, just look back in history. So
really?
Mm-hmm.
So that would suggest they think it's
cyclical.
A leading...
They think it's cyclical.
Oh,
yeah,
cyclical. Okay.
Cyclical. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yep. So that's what college is all about.
I thought it was all about boozing
and
marijuana and bikini chicks.
Yeah. No, those were powerful women.
That was Condoleezza Rice.
Right.
Yeah.
Laura Bush.
and
Bill Gates in a Speedo.
Not so.
And George Bush.
That's a sad one.
Yeah.
George Bush.
All right, you.
All right. Well, hey, I wanted to do a couple things, a couple shout-outs to some of our listeners. We got some feedback. I always forget to do this part, Gretchen, and... also, a little bit of announcement. Kevin sent me an email about the feed name. If you guys noticed, there was always a little dash before this and that podcast. And the reason why we did that, I think a lot of podcasters did that around the time, I think it was last summer, when iTunes came out. Because there was such a stupid system that they ranked your podcast in order of alphanumeric. So... we put a little hyphen in there, Gretchen. I mean, it's just a game. Everybody was playing this game at the time. It was really stupid, you know? But everybody was playing this game. They tried to get higher on the list. Well, I just forgot about it because I don't really think about these things. And it had been there for a year. And Kevin wrote me and said, you know what? It'd make it easier to find on my iPod if you didn't have the dash there. And I thought, you know what? You're right. So thank you, Kevin. And we have taken the dash out. So unfortunately, now they're probably like
looking for where's the show.
So I hope you guys can figure out it's under T for this and that. I wanted to thank CB. Not only did he send this stuff in on the Dunkin' Donuts, but he also liked my beignets comments. And he, because of the show, he tried some beignets and just liked them. So that was kind of cool to hear. And thank you, Tom, for defending our from our anonymous poster. I don't know what that was about. But
the man who hates me. Yeah. Oh,
right.
God, I'm the devil incarnate. Yes, that man. That man. I don't know much about salad dressing, sir. Well, actually, I do since I eat it every day. And
yes.
I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
I'm pretty sure you are. So anyway, Tom, we appreciate that. defending us. Hey, the phone line to call. We'll play listener comments as long as they're...
Have Mr. Anonymous call.
Yeah. Yeah. His voice will be like, oh,
you
know,
right.
Covered up.
She still sucks.
She still sucks. Get Pat back. That's what they always used to say. Get Pat back.
Oh.
Well, Pat's not coming back.
But you're pushing 50. You want to know what, 44?
Yeah, maybe we should 44? Maybe we should try to like sweet talk Pat into doing show 50 with us.
No, oh, there you go.
Kind of fun. Yeah, and Carol. We could like do the whole gang. All right. Phone number to call is 206-888-4851. That number again, 206-888-4851. And Gretchen's gone for like 2.5 weeks. I will probably, I'll try to put something together. I don't know what's going to happen. Not very well. So So we'll
I
see.
I bet you can.
Yeah, I'll probably give it a go. Last time I did it was last year. I did a show on Big Spider Beck, a jazz legend, and
right.
It felt so awkward to be in the studio by myself, talking to myself. I felt like such a loser. I have no friends. I have to talk on my microphone by myself.
But you like to listen to the history, Mr. Historian podcast, right?
I do.
And he talks to himself, right?
Maybe what I'll do is take an interesting topic, like I did last time, to me. Mm-hmm. And so, we'll probably do something. So stay tuned, and have a great trip, Gretchen.
Thank you, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right, sounds good. We'll